Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ashton Olt.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Towers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening to
the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
To the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
To the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
To the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast at Inside Lacrosse, featuring Big Ten Network and Inside Lacrosse analyst and my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, let's get it. Dix got another snowstorm out there, but it's like something I've never seen before. There's 2.5 inches of sleet fell outside of my house, and it's drifting, and it's very hard. You can't shovel it. You have to chip away at it and scrape it. And while I was out there shoveling before we started recording, we're recording this on Thursday evening, there were some of my neighbors walking by, and each one of them said, "Have you ever seen anything like this? This is crazy. I've never seen precipitation like this." So this is new to Maryland as far as I'm concerned, to see something like this.
It's like what we got was the sleet was first. So that provided that layer of ice, condensation, whatever. And then we did get some form of snow, but it was honestly, it was like shoveling sand out there. Like normally when you push, so like I like to do a pattern in our driveway and, you know, the kids help out. My wife, we all, it's a family effort. Like everybody shovels the sidewalk and then the walkway, our back patio, the driveway. And normally when you go side to side on the driveway, like you push that snow, it all collects in the base of the shovel. And it's, this was like sand in an hourglass, like it would just spill over the sides of the snow shovel. And it was quite heavy too. A lot of resistance there as well. So
yeah,
had a good workout.
So we are feeling for lacrosse fans across most of the nation this week who are dealing with severe weather from the Rocky Mountains east for sure, and we're feeling for you. And the good news is I don't think it's going to really interrupt any of the games that were scheduled for this week. There were some games earlier in the week that they got in, and there are games that will be this weekend, lots of them, Dix, and I can't wait to get to those on Saturday and Sunday. Almost a full slate with lots of teams participating, some making their debuts. So we have a lot to get to today, including looking at the news of the week in college lacrosse, especially some breaking news from the Ivy League this afternoon. We're going to answer some mailbag questions from our listeners. We have a full slate of game previews, and our Give and Go segment, I think, is pretty good this week. But, Dix, let's begin with your general thoughts on what you saw during last week's games.
I thought we saw some really good action. We saw a lot of goal scoring in some games, and we saw defensive struggle in others. And thought Virginia continues to impress against an Army team that is very good defensively. And you have to give a lot of credit to the netminder who came in for Virginia, pinch hitting for Alex Rode, who was unavailable and played well. I thought Carolina looked impressive again. Nice win against Jacksonville, a team that played with a ton of energy. Then you move over Sunday. Loyola Richmond was a really just two teams. You could tell it was their first time out. Tough day shooting, but I like the goaltending in that game. I thought the defense was pretty good. And I like the analogy that Terry Foy drew in his podcast earlier in the week, saying that, you know, the end of that game was similar to an NFL game on Sunday, you know, those last 7-8 minutes of a football game. That's what we got for Richmond and Loyola. It was,
what do you mean by that? What was Terry talking about?
So when you turn it, when you turn on, like if you're done the 1 o'clock window and you turn your Ravens play at 4 o'clock and you turn that TV on at 3:30, 20-4, and you're catching the end of, you know, whoever's playing, it just seems like there's a lot of action in that last 7-8 minutes of the game, you know, comeback, a stop, clock management, penalties, all that kind of stuff. You know, I thought we had all of that in the Loyola Richmond game in that last quarter. I can't remember what the score was going into the fourth quarter, but you just had an offensive flurry in that fourth stanza, punctuated by Kevin Lindley, a kid who had no goals up until the fourth quarter, and he scores three in a row to tie the game for Loyola. I guess he got him. I can't remember the scenarios, but I know he tied the game late, and then he won it in overtime for the Greyhounds. So that was a really entertaining game for me to watch and enjoy. High Point and Robert Morris. Wow, that was I didn't expect that. I didn't expect High Point to be in control. They seemed to have a 4 or 5 goal buffer that entire game. I thought that game was going to be a little closer than it was. So in some games, again, offensive explosion, that was the du jour. And then other games you had defensive struggle and shooting struggles and what you would expect from early season, you know, not only just early season, but like first time going against a different color jersey situation in 2021.
Obviously, it's very refreshing to see college lacrosse being played again, but I thought that the gameplay has been pretty strong so far. Good product being put out on the field.
I would agree. And it's only going to get better. I think we're seeing these kids really embrace and appreciate the opportunity to go out and play lacrosse. They're excited when they're on the field. The benches are high energy, a lot of support for their teammates. I think we saw that case in point, the midweek game, High Point, North Carolina, when the Panthers made that nice run in the third quarter to turn a 15-7 deficit. They trimmed it to 15-13. The energy that was coming from the bench and the support of their teammates on the field was really high level, very energetic. And like you said, it's just great to see lacrosse. It's great to see these kids get out there and get after their passion, and seeing a lot of great, you know, Asher Nolting, wonderful performance. Chris Gray has been sublime for North Carolina. Peyton Cormier is Chris Cloutier 2.0 with a lot of the way he's playing. You know, just some of the notable performances we mentioned, Kevin Lindley from Loyola. But it's been great, and it's only going to get better. I mean, we got even more games on tap this weekend. Knock on wood. You know, with COVID protocols, like you said, we're recording our weekly podcast on a Thursday. And so far we've gotten, knock on wood, again, no information on cancellations, postponements, that kind of thing, which is a good day.
Yeah. Again, the gameplay has been really impressive considering it's early in the season, considering that there wasn't much fall ball and preseason practice. And I think I'm impressed with that. And certainly the energy level and effort every time out by every team is going to be strong this year. And looking forward to the games this week. Okay, Dix, news of the week. A little after lunchtime on Thursday, the Ivy League breaks some news that people have been waiting to see for a long time. The Ivy League Council of Presidents has decided not to hold league competition or host league championships this spring. While acknowledging the current public health environment is not compatible with a traditional Ivy League season, the council has also put in place a process that may allow for limited local competition during the spring if public health conditions improve sufficiently to allow greater levels of in-person activity at Ivy League campuses. So what does this mean? It means the Ivy League will not be conducting a conference spring season in any sport, including men's and women's lacrosse. And they say, due to the ongoing impacts of the pandemic and in order to maintain compliance with campus travel, visitor, and gathering policies, also state guidelines governing each institution, they won't have a season. And they will not have championship either. However, member institutions will continue with the league-wide phases for athletics activities, which are already in place on all league campuses. So what they're saying is there's a 4-scale there's actually 5 levels. It starts with a 0 phase and goes to a 4th phase. And while the league's goal is to work local competition in phase 4, it's currently not permitted on any Ivy League campus to play. There's definitely a lot of disappointment on Ivy League's campuses around the spring sports, especially with lacrosse people that I've talked to. You know, one of the mailbag questions, or several of the mailbag questions that we want to get to, Dix, cover the topic of in-person fans at games. And, you know, if people can't, in some places people can go to games, some people can't. these guys aren't even allowed to play. And local competitions, what does that mean? Again, I'm sure coaches had backup plans and they have been working since the fall on contingency plans, who they might be able to schedule games with just in case something like this happens. But it's pretty late. It's pretty late to get into game schedules and to work in midweek games against non-conference opponents for some of the Ivy League schools that still want to participate.
This is no surprise. It's very sad, but I equate this to you took a test and you know you didn't do well, but there's that glimmer of hope. Maybe I got this one right. Maybe the essay, if it goes this way, and then you get that test back and it's a big, fat, juicy fail. And you're like, yep, okay. But there it is in black and white. Like, I thought this was the way it was going to go. And now I have proof and it sucks to see it in front of my face. This was the Ivy League release earlier on Thursday. You know, it was, there it is, black and white. Finally, resolution, no spring competition, no spring championships. Sayonara, thanks for coming. It's devastating. You know, it really is. But I think everybody kind of had a feeling this was going to be the end game. So there's no surprise. Again, there's just sort of that disappointment, that empty feeling. And one of our listeners tweeted in, will this have an effect on recruiting over the next couple of years? Will this have an effect on coaching? And I think the answer is yes and yes. When you're a student athlete, as attractive as the Ivy League is, knowing that if you go there to play lacrosse, and let's not just leave it to lacrosse. I mean, you know, baseball, softball, equated to other Ivy sports, potentially. Know that you're really not valued in that regard, that they will shut you down for reasons that are justifiable, but they didn't even look seemingly for an alternative or a plan or a way to get these kids back into competition, which is the most difficult and devastating aspect of it. You didn't even try. You know, you're a father, I'm a father. You know, we deal with failures, whether it's on the athletic field, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's in other areas of your kids' lives. But the first question that you ask them and the first thing you try to pick up on was, did you try your best? Did you give it an effort? And if that answer is yes, then you can say, you know what, well, it just didn't work out for you. But that's, you know, the frustrating part if they're like, well, you know, yeah, I didn't do well on this test, but I really didn't study. Or I had a terrible practice, but I was out last night, you know, where I was playing Xbox till 2 a.m. You know, they didn't even give these guys a chance. And then subsequently as a coach, when now you've got to look at these kids for the second year in a row and say, we're done. I got nothing for you. No practice, no games, no Ivy League tournament, no shot at the NCAA tournament, nothing. That takes its toll. And I think that really does take its toll. So I think this will have ripple effects for years to come in the Ivy League.
So again, there's a lot more still to be decided, but do you think that the Ivy League teams that may try to put together a schedule, what if they can put together six games? Mm-hmm. A team like Penn maybe can get six non-conference games against some pretty good teams and they go 6-0, 5-1. Do they have an outside shot at an at-large?
I think that's a million-dollar question that a lot of folks are asking. What, first of all, will there be an NCAA tournament? If there is an NCAA tournament, what's it going to look like? And then if there is an NCAA tournament with what it's going to look like, how are the teams going to be chosen? You're looking at a lot of different scenarios where teams are playing each other twice. Teams are playing in conference only. Now you have a situation where, you know, let's take Penn. You use Penn as an example. You know, they could play what? St. Joe's. They could play Villanova. They could play Penn State.
Drexel,
you know, right across the street, that just to name a handful. But I think there's a lot of questions that remain. But if you go to the efforts to put together a season, to put together a docket, an opportunity for your kids to play, and you meet criteria for the NCAA tournament, then yeah, you should be strongly considered. No question.
So earlier this week, the Penn lacrosse team sent a letter to the Ivy League presidents and administrators pleading their case for why there should be a season, and their argument was threefold. First, scientific research concludes that there is no evidence of on-field transmission. And we saw that with, they lay out a detailed case for each of these points, these 3 points. You know, they played a college football season happened, you know, it can be done. And other college lacrosse teams are playing this spring. Second, having competition aligns with the conference's commitment to following the science. And their third point is that canceling the season will not only be mentally harmful, but also even less COVID safe. And they really make a good case of why the Ivy League should be playing. I think possibly the timing of this announcement today could be in reaction to this letter from Penn and other instances of people asking for answers, pleading their case, alums wanting to know answers. And we see what the Ivy League has done. They've said, we're just not going to do it. So, Dix, my question to you is, why are they doing this? Is it for appearances? If the Penn lacrosse team is laying out a case of why it doesn't seem fair or even following the science, why is the Ivy League doing this? Why are they canceling spring sports?
I don't know. I don't have any inside information. My personal feeling, and it's been, I've been feeling this way for a while, you know, when it comes to the science of this whole thing, the science is only convenient when it fits a political or a social narrative. And I don't think that this is a case where it fits, because why pay attention to science when maybe lacrosse can go out and play, but tennis can't play or baseball can't play? I think it goes back to what we talked about last week with the Joe Tsai news story about funding a bubble for men's and women's lacrosse. It's not equal. Not everybody's going to get a trophy in that situation, meaning there isn't funding for other sports. Why should lacrosse have the quote unquote privilege of playing when other sports don't? And the answer that you and I would have is, well, why don't you go out and find the donor, like a la Joe Tsai for another sport? But that's not the way it works. It's everybody. Look, you could talk to coaches in athletic departments around the country, and Coach X for this sport gets this, Coach Y doesn't. Instead of Coach Y maybe modeling their program or their initiatives over Coach X, they instead go to the administration and say, why does Coach X get this? Why can't I have that? And then all of a sudden, Coach X is a bad person because they did a specific fundraiser or did a specific initiative or got a donation from an alum or group of alums. Like all of a sudden, they're a bad person. I think that's the way some college athletic programs are working. And it's a shame. We're on the path of everyone needs to be treated equal in athletic. I mean, let's just say, take a program that's not fully funded and they have to play North Carolina or Virginia or Maryland. All of a sudden they're going to say, well, wait a second, you know, Coach Bresci and Coach Tiffany and Coach Tillman have all these, why can't I have that? Like, I want that. I need that. I'm not going to play those guys until I get that. Well, fine. You're off the schedule and we'll move on and we'll play somebody else that wants to play us. That's, I guess it's much more harder, much more difficult to navigate within the walls of an athletic department than it is cross universities, cross different colleges. I don't know. Maybe I'm completely off base, but I think the everybody gets a trophy scenario that everybody mocks and jokes about has bubbled up during this pandemic.
Yeah, and just to wrap up, you know, the people who are hurt the most are the student athletes. You know, think of those fifth year kids in the Ivy League who came back and stayed loyal to their school and just wanted one more season playing with their team, and they couldn't. And some of their teammates who may have transferred are playing right now. And mm-hmm. you know, their loyalty was not rewarded, and that's a shame, and it's sad. But let's move on, Dick. So along these same lines, multiple mailbag questions from listeners about fans in stadiums. And, you know, they're all on the same theme of, you know, their local plays. Like, why are restaurants allowed to have six people in? Why can and I do this? Why can't I double mask? Why are there high school basketball fans indoors, but not at, you know, what lacrosse is allowing? And it kind of fall on the lines of, why is the NCAA not allowing limited number of fans in the stadiums to watch games? And it should be made clear that it's not a NCAA thing. There were fans at football games in the fall when it was spiking and really bad. It's not an NCAA thing. It is a local jurisdiction thing, and it's an individual institution thing, following their local rules. The athletic director at Navy 2 weeks ago put out a statement that they would have fans at Navy Marine Corps Stadium for their games, yet in other places, no fans. So it really falls on a local thing. It's not some sports-wide or NCAA-wide thing. And, you know, for fans that are upset about that, you got to take it to your son or daughter's school or the local people there in the health departments or the politicians and ask them. And that's the best answer I can give you for that one.
Look, you're spot on. It's a university decision. It's a athletic department decision. It's a case-by-case basis. The biggest thing that I would point out is the biggest piece is the kids are playing. That's the biggest piece. Do I wish fans could be in the stands, you know, when I go to Panzer to call a game or when I'm in College Park or when I go to Homewood Field? And absolutely. It makes the experience that much better, that much richer. But the bottom line is the kids are out there playing and competing. So I take the Virginia Army game this past weekend, which was supposed to be Virginia UMass. Not only was it Virginia Army, but they moved it from Clockner to a back turf field in Charlottesville. And the Virginia lacrosse program, the Virginia Student Network, whatever entity broadcast that game, made a stream happen. And we got to watch two really good lacrosse teams compete. So I think that's a real positive. People are being incredibly resourceful. People are being incredibly resilient during this time. And I don't have an answer as to why certain school X is not allowing fans while school Y is, and, you know, school X for lacrosse and school Y for, you know, women's or men's basketball, you know, is allowing fans. I don't have any answers to that. It stinks, especially for parents of seniors who want to be there, especially on a senior day, potentially, where you want to hug your son or daughter, when you want to walk them out to the field that one last time. But maybe that changes. Like, things are changing. It seems like on a weekly, sometimes daily basis, with cases dropping, more vaccines becoming available, whatever the case may be. So, like, much like we were talking back in what, March of 2020, be patient. You know, let's see how this thing plays out. And at the end of the day, hang your hat on the fact that your son or daughter does get to compete. They do get to play. And that in and of itself is reason to smile.
All right, let's change the subject to something a little more lighthearted. We had one mailbag.
Yeah, this is question. We're like a news serious magazine here. I feel like the gloom and doom of network news, for God's sakes.
68 minutes.
Not 8 minute abs, 7 minute abs.
So here's a lighthearted question from Brad Campbell. A listener asked us, who do you think has the best helmets in lacrosse?
That's a good question. There's a lot of sweet lids out there. I will say that I loved my helmet from when I played at Hopkins.
The old school one?
Well, yeah, just the way it looked, you know, the black bucket. Yeah. Come on, the black bucket with the white and blue panels.
I did like the white and blue panels. Always like that classic checkerboard look. Yeah.
Classic. But we only got one of those for 4 years.
Yeah. So that's one thing I'm impressed with. You know, Phil Junis is the equipment guy at Hopkins. And one time he showed me all the different helmets that they had. And you see them on game day. And it's really impressive. They have multiple sets that match different kits. It's almost like Oregon football, where they never have to wear the same uniform in our 4 year career at Homewood Field. So I like seeing a lot of different variations. You know,
and Hopkins is not alone in that. No. I mean, how many times have you gone on Instagram and Rutgers or Virginia or Even High Point is like, hey, help us. What set do we wear today? What helmet? Yeah. What jersey? What pair of shorts are we wearing? What combo?
I like the chrome helmets. Anybody who has got that shiny chrome. Sweet. I think Syracuse broke out an orange chromed look a few years ago, and those are pretty tight. I like the Hopkins ones, the white ones with the Neil Grauer Blue Jay, the Nag yes. Jay on the side, the cartoon Jay, pretty sweet. And again, anything that's like chrome. I think Rutgers has a chrome helmet, a silver helmet.
Cherry red. They have like a cherry red.
Yeah, those that's are pretty good. I'm big on those things.
I've always been a fan of Michigan's lacrosse helmet just because it replicates the football helmet. So I think.
You mean the Delaware Blue Hens helmet? Michigan.
What's older, the Delaware design or the Michigan design?
The Michigan one. A little bit of history. When my dad was playing football at Delaware, a new coaching staff came and they were all Michigan guys, and they brought a lot of the traditions and like that helmet, that winged helmet, to Delaware, and then the Blue Hens kept it.
Cool. So I do like Michigan's helmet. God, there's so many. There really are. Loyola has a nice chrome with the old school Greyhound on it that I really like. Notre Dame's gold helmets. How can you not like those? I mean, it's simple, plain, but classic, much like their football helmet. Trying to think. I mean, I think the better question is, are there any helmets out there that you don't like? And I don't think that there are many that I don't like.
Okay, Dick. So we'll work in some of the other mailbag questions as we move throughout our program today. And I think it's time to get into this week's games. A lot of the questions were about individual teams, and we'll cover that as we get to the previews. So there's a total of 22 games listed on the schedule for this weekend. Two games that I'm aware of have been postponed. UMass was supposed to play UMass Lowell on Saturday. Lehigh was scheduled to play UAlbany on Sunday. And those games don't look like they're going to happen. But lots of teams are making their debut this week, highlighted by the return of the Big Ten and Hopkins getting out on the field for the first time under new head coach Peter Milliman. So let's start with a Big Ten game in our weekend preview. Number 6, Penn State at number 17, Rutgers. They play at noon. And one of the questions from John Erickson wrote to us and asked, who's going to start with the ball on the Penn State offense now that Grant Amant has graduated from Happy Valley?
That's a great question. And I think we're going to find out firsthand this coming weekend when Penn State faces off against a Rutgers team that I think has a lot of high expectations. So, you know, Penn State, the names are going to be familiar with, obviously Mack O'Keefe is back, for my money, the best shooter in college lacrosse, but to handle the ball, to take that role of Grant Amant, I don't think you have one guy that takes Amant's place. I think it's by committee. I think you may have to adjust the offense a little bit, but that offense has always been quick ball movement. The ball never died in anybody's stick, including Grant Amant's, but they got a lot of capable ball handlers coming back. You know, TJ Malone is a guy, Jack Kelly, Jack Traynor. Those are all guys that have proven hybrid through their years. They can play both midfield and attack. I do think Jack Traynor, who's been mostly at midfield during his time in Happy Valley, plays more attack this season with Mack O'Keefe, with Dylan Folds, those guys. Cole Willard is another name that pops up into my mind. Dan Rayum, who played a lot in 2019 and really wasn't in the rotation last year in 2020 with the emergence of some other guys, I think gets more of a bigger role. So, again, I think Traynor is the person that takes Amant's spot on attack, but we'll find out Saturday. Rutgers, again, a team. They return Kieran Mullins. They return Adam Charlin-Bedis. Question mark in the goal. I don't think they did they lose Max Edelman a year ago. The two goaltenders that split time last year weren't terrific. They've always had trouble facing off. Haven't been great in that category, but I'm interested and excited. Colin Kirst, the middy that comes over from Villanova, in basically a preseason first team All-American everywhere you look. He was a first team All-American, according to Inside Lacrosse, at the end of the abbreviated 2020 season. I think he gives them a huge shot in the arm. Another kid I'm looking, I thought he was going to take a giant step forward last year before the cancellation, was David Sprock, a middy out of Dallas for Rutgers. So, lots of like with that Penn State Rutgers matchup.
Mailbag question from @D_fly asks, when will the Big Ten come out with their broadcast schedule for 2020?
Who is @D_fly? Sounds like a stalker.
Some troll.
Yeah, basically.
Some Twitter troll.
I don't know. But I can announce publicly, and it's already been announced publicly, that February 26th, so not this Friday, but the Friday after, at Penn State, 5:30, Maryland, Penn State, live on the Big Ten Network. Drum roll, if you will. It'll be Mark Dixon and Joe Beninati on that call. So February action for Joe B. Guess he has a little bit of a opening in his hockey schedule, so we'll be bringing you that. But beyond that, we haven't gotten any information. This is typically the time of year where our broadcast schedule for BTN does come out, the end of February. But quite frankly, programming, it's a huge challenge. You know, with all movement, postponements, cancellations, with just the winter sports that are taking place, lacrosse hasn't been set in stone. But stay tuned; it'll be hopefully in short order.
You know, I'm a big ACC basketball fan, Dix, and you turn on the ACC network on any given weeknight, and you don't know what you're going to see in place of the game that got canceled by COVID. Some of the craziest programming you can possibly imagine. But there's been some classic games that they put in there. So I completely understand that. And we're all looking forward to getting to seeing when the games come up. But that's next Thursday.
Next Friday.
26th, right?
Friday. Next February Friday. 26th. So I know you're a big ACC basketball. How do you feel this year about that conference? They're down a little bit, especially your Dukies.
Oh,
Dukies are struggling.
It's rough. Yeah,
and Coach K really going are. Off on they, a poor kid after the win over somebody a few weeks ago. He was not having it.
He apologized. They won two in a row, and they've looked a lot better. Although the most talented player on their team, a kid who is allegedly a first-round, a lottery pick this year, Jalen Johnson, has opted out. And I wonder if we'll see something like that in lacrosse. I doubt it. But it was a strange – it's been a rough season for the Blue Devils.
Is he going to be like the NBA guys are looking that up. Are on the trading block? Is he now attend the games or sit on the bench in street clothes waiting to opt
out? Well, they address that. Again, I don't want to get too much basketball. But I think reporters were hoping that in the press conference after the Duke's game against Wake Forest on Wednesday that someone would have something negative to say about Jalen Johnson, and all the players and Coach K all said, oh, we support him.
Yeah.
He's still part of the team.
All right.
You know, he's still with us, and the guys all talk to him still. It's not like
How about Big Ten basketball this year? I think they've got like 7 or 8 teams in the top 20. It's pretty.
Yeah. I saw something today. Michigan Wolverines passed Gonzaga as the top favorite in sports books to win the national championship. And Gonzaga was the favorite for a long time. So.
Interesting.
All right. Moving on back to lacrosse. Number 8, Ohio State at number 19, Johns Hopkins. Homewood Field at noon on Saturday. And we have a listener question from Kyle Wendt. Says, what are you most interested in watching during Hopkins' first game under Coach Peter Milliman?
Oh, I'm excited to see both these teams. Ohio State, I thought, had good mojo last year when the season was canceled. They return Trey LeClaire, Ryan Tarenfenko, the best short stick D-middy in Division I men's lacrosse. Jack Myers back on attack, I think, is exciting. Watching the development of their defense, I think, will be interesting. They'll have a new goaltender with Josh Kearson now playing for Johns Hopkins. And to my knowledge, a starter hasn't been named as of when we're having this conversation. It's a battle between Kearson and Ryan Darby. But for Hopkins, I'm interested in just seeing – the energy level that they come out and play. New coach, new coaching staff. They've gone through a lot. No fall ball whatsoever officially. They went back super early, December 28th, started practice January 4th. So that's about a month, 2 weeks to a month before other teams reported for practice. So that's a lot of time beating up on one another, beating up on the same jersey. Now, of course, they had that 10-day respite where practice was shut down, the school was shut down because of COVID issues. So I think the energy level and the excitement to compete is the biggest thing that I'm looking for Hopkins.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing how their offense will look. They've played a certain style for the past two decades, and new coaching staff, new ideas. And I want to see what they can get out of this team, what brand of lacrosse they're going to play, and whether they'll be able to play Cornell style with the current roster that he has. And again, I was talking to an administrator at Hopkins this week, and he related to me that they're just happy that they're going to try to play a game this week. And it hit me. This is the first athletic contest at Johns Hopkins University in a full year, any sport. They haven't done anything, you know, and you imagine this time of year, a place like Hopkins, there could be 12 different sports that are in action at the end of February. You know, men's women, swimming, wrestling, indoor track, basketball teams, the lacrosse teams, the baseball team.
Yeah, you're right.
A lot. And they haven't had an event, a single event in a year. Now, at some of these other schools we're talking about, you know, the ACC schools, the
big oh, they're
schools.
D1,
a lot of them have had football or they've played some other sports or they're playing basketball now. But at a school like Hopkins, they haven't had a single athletic event.
And well, you keep saying a school like Hopkins, it's a D3 school with two Division I programs, men's and women's lacrosse, right?
Yeah, so it's very unique in lacrosse.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, good points.
I'm just happy that they'll be out there and it'll be fun to see the Blue Jays, any Blue Jays.
Well, you mentioned the Blue Jays offensively. You know, I think roles have kind of dissolved a little bit. You know, I think you're going to see Connor DeSimone play some attack. I think you're going to see Cole Williams play some midfield. And I think they're going to be interchangeable, quite honestly.
If you look at
their roster, they do have positions listed, attack, A for attack, M for midi. But for a lot of the midis, SS. Not SSDM, SS. Which means, I guess, they're a short stick defensive midfielder. But they have, you know, SS, short stick. So, interesting designation when normally it's SSDM or D-mid or def-mid or something like that on most rosters.
Dix, another Big Ten game. All six teams in action this weekend, hopefully. Michigan travels to College Park to take on the number 5 Terps at 1 p.m. in a game. A lot of people excited to see what the Terps can do this season.
There's a lot of excitement around Maryland. They've got a lot of weapons. And interestingly, you know, Bobby Benson, new offensive coordinator for the Terps. A lot of people look at that and they're like, oh my, they're shocked because of Benson's Johns Hopkins lineage. Player, longtime assistant coach. But it makes sense when you consider who's on the other bench. Kevin Connery, Johns Hopkins Blue Jay, former Maryland assistant, defensive coordinator, won a national championship with the Terps back in 2017. Scott Maher, assistant for the Maryland Terrapins under Dick Adell. Dave Slavkowski, if you really want to go back, played for Bob Scott, longtime assistant and best friend to Dick Adell, former Maryland head coach. So there is a lineage of Blue Jays going over to coach the University of Maryland. I'm interested in seeing Logan Wisnowskis, Bubba Fairman, Jared Bernhardt back after flirting with football at Ferris State for a bit. And they got a lot of talented freshmen that could make an impact at the University of Maryland. So, you know, when you talk about Michigan, I think that they were, but at the end of 2019, they beat Ohio State for the first time in their program's history. They got off to a little bit of an inauspicious start last year, lost to Merrimack, who bumped up from D2. But they got a young man, Josh Sawada, an attackman, freshman a year ago, lit it up. Terrific offensive presence. Great shooter, good off ball. Interesting to see his development and progression. The, you know, Wolverines, Terps, they weren't able to play football, right? They couldn't play football because of COVID. I don't think that game ever materialized. And I know the Wolverines basketball team whooped the Terps twice in men's hoops. So this will be good. Maybe Maryland can exact a little revenge against Ann Arbor this weekend.
So as I mentioned, there's 17 games scheduled on Saturday. One more that I want to get your opinion on Saturday that involves two top rated teams. Number 3, Virginia, will travel up to Baltimore to play the number 11 Loyola Greyhounds at 5:00.
Well, I think if you look at their body of work so far, these two teams are very different. Virginia, very potent offense, a lot of weapons, a lot of productivity and wins over Towson and Army, whereas Loyola really had to scratch and claw and get some offensive mojo late in their game against Richmond to pull out the win in overtime. But I this is a great series. And you look back 2 years ago, Loyola beat Virginia. Basically, Jacob Stover had a better day between the pipes than Alex Rode did, but then Virginia goes on and wins the national championship. Last year in Charlottesville, life after Pat Spencer, Loyola plays a great game. They lose by 3 or 4, but that was a competitive game that was really undecided in anybody's ball game up until the closing minutes of that contest. You got Ryan McNulty, tremendous long stick middie. Who does he match up on? Does he take Schellenberger? Does he take Dox Aiken? Who does he match up with in the midfield for Virginia? Defensively for the Cavaliers, you know, you got Lindley and Olmstead that are the guys that are, you know, really the playmakers down there. So I'm really interested to see this game. Bailey Savio started off hot, the faceoff dot against Richmond, cooled off a little bit, but really was there when it ended. So, you know, those specialty positions, Loyola has two of the best in the game, McNulty and Savio. So does Virginia, Jared Connors, their long stick middie. Where does he go? What is his impact on the game? So should be a terrific game in Baltimore Saturday. ESPN Plus, I think that game is on. And then the Hopkins-Ohio State game, I believe that's ESPN 3. So you will be able to watch that game streamed. And then Maryland-Michigan is BTN Plus. So a lot of pluses out there, Dan Flynn.
Yeah, you got to get your subscription services up to date now that lacrosse season's in place. All right, Dix. Three games on Sunday involving top 20 teams, and they're all great games, including one game that two teams that haven't played yet, and we'll see them for the first time. Starting at noon, number 13 Army at number 4 Syracuse.
Well, hey, everybody's been waiting to see the Orange. And a lot of people feel like they are the best team in the ACC. A lot of people feel like Syracuse is the best team in the country. And when you look at that midfield, Dordovic and Curry and Trimboli, you know, Chase Scanlon on the attack, Rafis back on the attack. That's a potent offense. Drake Porter, a lot of people think is the best goalie in the country. So, you know, but Syracuse does have the home advantage. I'm not sure if fans are allowed the dome or not to increase that home field advantage if they are. But Army's a team that they've never been afraid of the Carrier Dome. You know, they've beaten Army there. They've beaten Syracuse there before, including the NCAA tournament a few years back. They have a game under their belt. This is Syracuse's first game. So advantage Army, you know, at least being adjusted to the speed of a real game. But a lot of people really excited to see this thing. I think that game's on ACC, either ESPN 3 Plus or ACC Network. I know it's going to be available.
Number 18, Villanova at number 9, Georgetown.
Wow. Again, getting right, you know, skipping all the formalities and going right into conference play. And you know, Georgetown is a team that was undefeated last year. Outstanding goalie play from Owen McElroy. And I think they have a legitimate candidate for the Smizer Award, the best defenseman in Division I college lacrosse in Gibson Smith. He is terrific. Really, really good player. Jake Caraway is the leader down on the attack. He's a fifth year. And then you look at Villanova. How will they fare after losing Kirst, the middie? You know, he was a lot for them last year. They do have one of the better defenders in the Big East in the nation. Jamie Kennedy comes back. I think you have to give the advantage to Georgetown in this game a little bit on paper, but these are, again, it's first game of the year, you know, first game of the year. And the Big East is such a tough conference, and that's Denver's home. And, you know, you have to check yourself and realize that 2018, 2019, Georgetown won that conference championship and the automatic qualifier for the NCAA tournament. So love what Kevin Warren is building in DC.
And finally, number 16, Richmond, non-conference game against another ACC team that has looked very impressive this season. Number 2, North Carolina.
Wow. You know, North Carolina, I keep saying, wow, like I sound like a broken record, but you know, been without lacrosse for such a long time. Chris Gray, sensational. I think he's established himself as a front runner, if not the front runner for the Tuaraton. Love that first midfield. We talk about the first midfield for Syracuse, but you know, Tanner Cook and Will Perry and Justin Anderson, they're tough. You know,
that's is 13 goals and 8 assists in 3 games good against pretty decent competition?
I think, you know, according to my math, that's 7 points a game. Take the 7 into 21, carry the 0.
That's not common core.
It's Michael Sauer's kind of numbers, right? He was averaging around 9 points a game last year. So, and I think the difference this year for Carolina is Will Bowen. I feel like the Heels haven't had that, if there is such a thing, that lockdown defender in. And Bowen, I think, not only is a good one-on-one defender, I think he's good off the ground. He's good in transition. And he'll subsequently be going to Georgetown next year for his last couple of years of eligibility. But I like Carolina's, the goalie was shaky against High Point, especially early, but buckled down, made an incredible diving save in that game. And then Richmond, I mean, that's a team built on defense. You know, Russ Bolton, the goal is strong. Was it Reynolds, close, Menges, I thought, you know, you got to see him against McNulty this, or on the same field with Ryan McNulty of Loyola this past weekend. I think he's Richmond's best player. I do, you know, Mitch Savaka. I kind of forgot about Mitch Savaka until he ran out of the box like a bat out of hell and stuck one from, you know, 13 yards. That was a nice shot. Richmond is not going to be an easy out for North Carolina, much like High Point wasn't. How about High Point's fighting spirit? I mean, you're down 15-7, you know, in the third quarter at Fetzer, and a lot of teams then just kind of pack it in, and High Point made that run, 6 goals in a row. But, you know, Richmond not as talented offensively or explosive as High Point. And you got to give a lot of credit to the two faceoff guys, Tucci and Tyre, for North Carolina. They've been really, really good through their first 3 games. That should be a really entertaining game. Tar Heels and Spiders.
Lots of good games on tap this week, so make your plans now to schedule your lacrosse viewing so that you can get to see your fill. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go. And I like the subject this week. You know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has their list of 16 nominees for induction into the 2021 Hall of Fame. Now, not all of them will get in. And fans can go vote on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame website. I recommend that you do. I want to get your opinion on ranking on these. Or I'll tell you who they are, and then we can discuss them a little bit as need be. They generally take about no more than half, like so, maybe 8. So, you know, you're going to have to eliminate a few of these, and I think we can do that quickly. But I want to see if we can not rank them per se, but just who gets in the class this year. And then
is it a number of acts that get in? Like you said, there's 16 nominees. Is it a maximum, or is it a, you have to have a threshold of votes, like 75%? I think 75% is for like the Major League Baseball.
I think you're right. It's probably something like that. Okay. But I know that they generally take, I just went back in history the last like decade or so. They take about 6 to 8. There was one year they took 9. I don't know how many nominees there were, but they're about 6 to 8 acts or nominees each year. And some people are nominated not as just performers, but, you know, as a producer or something like that. So I'll go down the list.
Like, I know Tina Turner's up this year. She's already in for Ike and Tina Turner.
Yeah. She's there's only one woman that's in the Hall of Fame twice.
Cher?
Stevie Nicks.
No, oh, yeah. Individual and then Fleetwood Mac, right?
Yeah. So here's the list.
Well, I'm voting for Def Leppard.
Here's the list. And it's in alphabetical order somewhat. So Mary J. Blige, Kate Bush, Devo, Foo Fighters, The Go-Go's, Iron Maiden, Jay-Z, Chaka Khan, Carole King, Fela Kuti.
What?
Am I saying that right? He didn't make my list. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah, Fela Kuti. I'm not sure. I have any of his work either.
LL Cool J.
Mm-hmm.
New York Dolls.
New York Dolls, yeah.
Rage Against the Machine. Todd Rundgren. Tina Turner. And Dionne Warwick.
That's what friends are for. I used to love Dionne Warwick when she hosted Solid Gold. Remember that show, Solid Gold? And the Solid Gold Dancers?
There is a note in here that if Carole King or Tina Turner get elected this year, they would become the second and third women after Stevie Nicks to get in. So they're both in some other capacity.
Oh, Carole King's already a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in another.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Not sure why.
Yeah.
I'll have to read a little bit more about her bio. So I gave you this list before. Do you have any initial comments, like surefire ones off of this list? And then let's just eliminate Fela Kuti, and I'm going to eliminate Dionne Warwick, the New York Dolls, and Kate Bush. I don't know any of their songs.
Oh, Dionne Warwick is she, but she's not rock and roll. But a lot of these acts aren't rock
and roll. For nomination.
Kate, I've never been a Kate Bush fan. She had some song that was popular back in the 80s or early 90s. It was annoying. New York Dolls. I think New York Dolls are like big. They were big on like the punk scene back.
Yeah, they're a punk band that influential to other punk bands more so.
Yeah, but I'm not super familiar with their work.
So do you have I think there's a couple at the top of both of our lists.
Why don't you go first? Go ahead.
Okay. I'll take LL Cool J.
I'm in full agreement with you. He's brilliant.
And the Foo Fighters.
I'm all in for the Foos as well. Yeah. My question isn't the criteria 25 years after the first release of your work?
I think so.
Have they been around for 25? Yeah, I guess they have, right? Kurt Cobain's been dead that long.
Yeah, I mean, 1996 maybe when they first released their first Foo Fighters album. Okay. And I'm going to put Jay-Z on there too.
I'm not a Jay-Z guy. I don't like Jay-Z.
There are other rappers that I like more, but what he's done in terms of as a career in music and how influential he is, he's going to be on my, he gets in.
Okay. Early. I don't like his music. He's not my cup of tea.
All right. I'll give you the next couple and where we can discuss. Cause I have my eight. I have my list of eight.
Yeah, you basically just took like all the most well-known. I do Go-Go's. I would do the Go-Go's. I mean, when's the last time, you know, all girl rock band? And
well, they were one of the first all girl rock band, and they were really good. There's a Showtime documentary about them.
Mm-hmm.
That's I don't know how I came upon this like a couple of months
ago. Dude, they're wild, man. They were wild back
then. They were crazy.
And yeah, Belinda Carlisle in particular.
They partied a lot. They made some really good music. And they wrote their songs too. It wasn't as if, you know, some like a pop band where they're just given their music. No, they wrote that stuff and performed it and taught themselves how to play. They just wanted to be there. It's good. Check out their Showtime documentary about the Go-Go's. So yeah, they're on my list too.
I do Go-Go's. I guess I'm inclined to say Iron Maiden, but I don't know. Like they were big back in the, so when I grew up in the suburbs of Catonsville, we had a group of guys around the neighborhood that wore the jean jackets with the Iron Maiden and the Quiet Riot and the Ozzy Osbourne, the Black Sabbath patches. We called them the Grits. Like they were the Grits, you know, they had the feathered hair and the mullets and they drove the Trans Ams. They were the kids in the woods smoking and drinking and all that stuff. And I just remember Iron Maiden. You know who's a huge Iron Maiden fan? John Gelotti.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Gelotti is big metal. Huge.
Gelotti's a big metal fan. Big metal fan.
But I was surprised because their lead singer, Bruce Dickinson, went out on his own. I think maybe his most famous solo song was a song called Tattooed Millionaire. And it's a good tune. And Gelotti had no idea of what it was. So maybe he's just truly an Iron Maiden fan. So Iron Maiden's like on the fence, but I don't know their work enough.
I agree with you. They're on the fence and they did not make my top eight. So I
Run to the Hills is a good song.
Yes, that is the one song of theirs that I knew off the top of my head.
Looking. And they had Eddie was the zombie or the mummy that was their mascot. Eddie was on all their albums. I tell you what, man, I think Tina Turner is incredibly talented. I like
Tina Turner. She's on my list
a lot.
Tina Turner's on my list.
And you know, when she, you know, to go through what she went through with Ike and to come back in the 80s with Private Dancer and that album. And you know, I'm a huge 80s fan. I love listening to the Big 40 Countdown every weekend on the 80s with the old MTV VJs. And like Tina Turner's a mainstay
on She's those. She's a star. She's on those, deserves to be
you know, the level recognized. Of success that she had.
Yep.
So, okay. So what would I said the Go-Go's and Tina Turner. Carole King's like the one that everybody's like, you're supposed to like her. Like Carole King, Joni Mitchell, James Taylor. They're all those. I'm not familiar with Carole King's work.
Same. So I can't she did not make my list.
Devo, no way. I mean, you know, Whip It's a great song, but that's it, right?
They have a couple more songs.
What? I mean, like Turning Japanese?
No, they took, you know, the Rolling Stones song, I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
Oh, that song sucks.
And they were just... they made my top... I don't think you have eight artists.
I do not have eight.
I went with like, I'm going to get half of them get in, and it was hard. So here's the rest of mine. So Mary J gets in.
I like Mary J Blige. Yeah.
You ever heard her song with U2? They sing One, the U2 hit song One.
I think I have.
And it, like Bono starts singing it, and then like halfway through the first chorus, he like hands it off to Mary J and she just blows it out of the water.
She's got a great voice.
Yeah, she's badass. I gave Devo on there and Rage Against the Machine. I love Rage Against the Machine.
I like Rage. I was never a huge Rage guy. They came out when we were in college and they're decent. But again, like when I think of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think of Pearl Jam and the Cars and Van Halen and, you know, The Who and Rolling Stones and like Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, you mean like groups that would perform at halftime of the Super Bowl and not the weekend?
Here you go again. Yes, of course. Yes. Yes, exactly. I don't see Rage Against the Machine showing up in a Super Bowl anytime soon.
I don't know.
I like Rage, but like Hall of Rock and Roll. But then again, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is so like kind of flimsy these days anyhow. I mean, it's flimsy anyway. Like you don't have certain people in that should be in. I don't know, whatever, man. Yeah, I could see Rage. That's fine. Todd Rundgren, I just want to hang on these drums all day.
He's probably going to get in for producing. They have a separate sort of award. Okay. And apparently, he's like a super producer that did make some great albums. But just about Rage Against the Machine, you know, their guitar player, Tom Morello.
Yeah.
You know who he's played? You know who he plays with?
He was in Audioslave.
He plays with the E Street Band a lot. He plays with Bruce Springsteen.
Well, that's reason in and of itself. Is it why didn't Bruce call him for a ride back a couple months ago?
I don't know. So just to recap. I think your list is probably only like five or six. So
yeah.
I went again in that alphabetical order. Mary J, Devo, Foo Fighters, Go-Go's, Jay-Z, LL Cool J, Rage Against the Machine, and Tina Turner. That's my Hall of Fame class for 2021. And we'll see how it turns out when people vote. We'll revisit this.
Later. Let's see how the voting goes.
All right. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. We need unity out there, people. Doesn't matter what team you like. We know your favorite team is D-Fly and Dixie. We always love to hear from you, so give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_Fly, D_FLY. As always, enjoy the games while you can.